Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, March 19, 2018. Local farmers complain about imported seeds in South Sudan.
My only appeal is to the government of the country, like if they can give at least a restriction to any other international agents who are dealing in agriculture and those who want to bring seeds, why it's good for them to promote the local organizations or local companies who are producing seeds.
And the UN wants governments around the world to manage natural resources.
Several water management objectives at the same time, improving water quality, but also reducing floods or droughts, improving access to water. So there's multiple benefits outside the water sector.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A local organization that distributes seeds in Budwe State wants the government to restrict international agencies from importing seeds into South Sudan. The UN's Food and Agriculture Representative in South Sudan says his office is not directly involved in procuring seeds and insists the FAO adheres to guidelines set by the Minister of Agriculture. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Koboko in Uganda.
The Global Agriculture Innovation and Solutions employs 34 people and works with 200 farmers across Budwe State. Mike Gaga Abe, executive director of the non-profit, claims his group produced more than 150 metric tons of maize seeds in 2017. He says he does not understand why the FAO imports seeds from other countries to distribute to farmers in Budwe State instead of buying local seeds from suppliers like his group.
100 metric ton, which is the open tender by FAO, and we applied. So they say they're going to send for us the inspection team, and which the inspection team never came. They said supposed to send since 4th of February, and up to today they never sent. To our surprise, we saw 100 metric ton of maize seeds imported to the state through Congo. I don't know where it comes from. And this that is brought by FAO.
Gaga says the 150 metric tons of maize seeds his group has produced is worth about $300,000.
My only appeal is to the government of the country, like if they can give at least a restriction to any other international agents or who are dealing in agriculture and those who want to bring seeds, why it's good for them to promote the local organizations or local companies who are producing seeds, because we have to build our country and we cannot build our country by importing.
Mariano Erneo is the Director General in Budwe State's Ministry of Agriculture. He says he's surprised to hear FAO has brought in seeds from outside South Sudan.
This is the first time I'm hearing that FAO has brought seeds into the state from abroad. As a ministry, we shall find out from them, because what we know, their intervention in this state is with a new project which is called SAFER. Then it is not going to run by them, that project. It is going to run by one of the NGOs.
FAO released a statement on March 8 in which it said, within the framework of the emergency response to prevailing food insecurity across the country, FAO supports vulnerable farmers by distributing crop seeds and tools for use in the main agricultural season. FAO says in order to do that, there are two mechanisms: distributing seeds purchased by FAO and distributing inputs through seed fairs, where FAO provides cash support to beneficiaries to buy seeds from the local market. The FAO insists that making local seed available to local farmers is a priority. Serge Tissot is FAO's country representative in South Sudan. He says FAO organizes seed fairs where local farmers bring their best seed and sell it to other farmers who need seed, and the FAO pays for it.
FAO is never making any pre-agreement before procurement. The procurement process of FAO follows international rule, and it's a independent and transparent process.
The source says Yambio is relatively peaceful, so FAO may organize a seed fair there later this year. He also says FAO has been working with the Global Agricultural Innovation and Solutions since 2016.
This company has already been supported by FAO in the past for the production of seed, but also for training and so other activity. So FAO knows this company, and we are working with this company.
The Food and Agriculture Organization says for the main agricultural season this year, it has issued tenders inviting local suppliers registered with the Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security and other companies from the region to bid. FAO says last year, Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security provided FAO a waiver for importing maize seeds for the 2018 planting season because of South Sudan's low production of seeds in the previous year and widespread displacement of producers due to the ongoing conflict. The source says FAO plans to distribute 5,000 metric tons of seeds to farmers in South Sudan this year compared to the 2,000 metric tons distributed last year. The audio in this story was provided by a Yambia FM journalist, Baraka John. Gift Friday for VOA News, Koboko, Uganda.
A new UN study says governments need to rely more on green water management to ensure a healthy planet and meet the needs of a fast-growing global population. That's one of the messages in the study by UN Cultural and Scientific Organization, UNESCO. The study considers the many benefits of natural water infrastructure like wetlands, urban gardens, and sustainable farming practices. Lisa Bryan reports.
Population growth, changing consumption patterns, and development are taking their toll on the world's water supplies. Water demand is increasing by about 1% a year, even as climate change, pollution, and erosion threaten its quality and availability. But until now, most countries have relied on traditional man-made water management systems, such as reservoirs, irrigation canals, and water treatment plants. A new UNESCO report finds that very little investment has gone into greener water management options, despite their many benefits.
Green solutions can meet several water management objectives at the same time, improving water quality, but also reducing floods or droughts, improving access to water. So there's multiple benefits outside the water sector.
Stefan Uhlenbrook is coordinator of UNESCO's World Water Assessment Program, which authored the study.
Green solutions can help to store carbon, create jobs, particularly in rural environments. They can also increase the biodiversity, which is also very essential.
The goal, UNESCO says, is not to scrap traditional water management options like dikes, but instead to strike the right balance between man-made systems and those relying more on Mother Nature. Some places are starting to do that. New York City saves hundreds of millions of dollars yearly in water treatment and maintenance by protecting vast natural watersheds. China plans to build pilot initiatives that recycle rainwater for urban consumption. Some communities are building artificial wetlands to fight flooding and pollution. Others, like the Indian state of Rajasthan, have adopted more sustainable soil and water management practices that boost harvests and fight drought, growing challenges in the future.
We have to grow some 50% more food in the next 30 to 40 years. So to do that, we have to think of how can we do that without cutting more forests, cutting more trees, and trying to develop more land, which is hardly possible in many places around the world.
Experts say greener water management can help to increase agricultural production by 20%, which may prove key in feeding a global population expected to reach nearly 10 billion by 2050. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The World Health Organization reports a major outbreak. A major breakthrough in efforts to contain South Africa's longest and largest listeria outbreak. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports fighting between armed groups in Northwest Central African Republic last December displaced some 65,000 people and prompted more than 22,000 others to flee to Chad in search of refuge. The agency finds this big refugee influx is adding an enormous burden on an area already hosting nearly 90,000 refugees and Chadian returnees from CAR. Southern Chad is considered one of Chad's poorest and most underdeveloped regions. UNHCR spokesman Babar Baloch says food shortages and rising prices are putting the lives of the refugees in host communities at risk.
Since last December, more than 15 Central African refugees have been killed on both sides of the border, and at least 67 have been subjected to sexual and gender-based violence while trying to go back to CAR to gather food and complement their scarce resources in exile.
UNHCR and partners have been providing protection, health care, water and sanitation, shelter, food and other basic relief to newly arriving refugees. But Balash tells VOA this is no longer possible because the money has run out.
Our worry is the funding. With no resources in our hand, it's really difficult to support refugees where humanitarian needs are so immense. Many refugees are living among the local villages. Many of the host communities are hosting them, but resources are needed to support both refugees as well as the host communities.
Balar says UNHCR has received only 2% of the $149 million it urgently needs for this year's operation in Chad. He says severe flooding has badly affected this season's harvest, and food reserves are nearly exhausted. As a consequence, he says, many refugees and local residents are eating leaves and wild fruit, which often are toxic. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
One of Australia's most successful Aboriginal mentoring projects is bringing its methods to South Africa and Uganda, from Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
When the Australian Indigenous Mentoring Experience, or AIM, began in 2005, it served just 25 Aboriginal children in Sydney. Since then, the program has grown rapidly, providing opportunities to 15,000 Indigenous high school students by pairing them with thousands of university undergraduates who provide free tutoring. At the heart of AIM's work is time. University students give their time for free to teach and guide Indigenous high school pupils between the ages of 12 and 18. These youngsters in turn are given time to visit university campuses, to attend workshops, and they can stay in the system for their entire high school careers. The scheme has helped some of Australia's most disadvantaged youngsters finish high school, go to university, and find a job. The mentoring program will be exported later this year to Uganda and South Africa. The founder of AIM, Jack Manning Bancroft, has recently returned to Sydney from a trip to Africa, where he explained his vision to students at the University of Pretoria.
You know, I said to them, I don't pretend to know anything about South Africa. You know, I've read Nelson's story. He's been a hero of mine, but I don't pretend to know your country. What I do know is that this model can mobilize volunteers. It can move between two incredibly important infrastructures, and we can move quickly, and we can build a global movement around this, which can have an energy and a force. And we're very good at mentoring. We're good at leading people. We're good at guiding people on principles. And they were really excited because it's not someone coming in saying, I have the solution for you. It's I have a template of which you can build it yourselves. I see our model being like IKEA for furniture. We just give the tools and let people put it together themselves, and that's why it works.
Indigenous groups say that education is the greatest single weapon to overcome disadvantage. But despite the concerted efforts of state and federal authorities, charities and other welfare groups, educational inequality persists. Disadvantage is entrenched, and while improvements in educational achievements are being made, many Indigenous students do poorly at school. About 60% of Aboriginal children are already well behind their non-Indigenous counterparts when they start school at the age of five. Australia's original inhabitants make up about 3% of the national population, but suffer disproportionately high rates of poverty, unemployment, and imprisonment. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at disease control methods. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think it's important for men to learn how to cook?
In the first place, let's say you stay alone, you don't have money, but you can get something to cook. Yeah, it's very important.
Africa, we have got our own roles, and also the ladies have got their own roles. But now, in this 21st century, we realize that what a man can do, a lady also can do on the other side. So it is good for a man or boys to learn how to cook at a very early stage.
In case when they are not with their wives, they are able to cook for themselves instead of going to spend money and buying food in the restaurant.
Can help you, for example, if your wife is sick or she's not there, you can cook for yourself and or do something for kids.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Armed separatists in Cameroon have abducted 40 people, including a government official. The abductions occurred as President Paul Biya dispatched a minister to the troubled English-speaking regions on a peace mission. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon businessman Angelbert Etoga has returned to his hometown, Yaoundé, 24 hours after he was abducted and released by armed separatist groups. He says he and about 36 others were on a bus traveling to Lebealem in southwestern Cameroon to attend a political rally when armed men attacked and seized the vehicle. Etoga says they were detained for several hours and some were asked to leave after being told they had to respect the territorial integrity of the English-speaking regions of Cameroon, which the kidnappers said was now a state called Ambazonia.
Il est possible qu'il y ait des complicités au sein de la population, au sein des notables.
Etoga says it is very possible there is some cooperation among some of the population, traditional rulers and separatist groups. He says he is very certain that many people are adhering to separatist ideologies. Etoga says he does not know how many people were freed or held back, but he found his way out of the bush and returned to Yaoundé. The most senior government official in Lebealem, Zachary Ugito, says Professor Ivo Leketambo, a former Secretary General of Cameroon's Secondary Education Ministry and now chair of the Cameroon General Certificate of Education Board, was also abducted.
I call first and foremost the population of Lewo, the traditional rulers of Lewo, to in fact put in place whatever means to ensure that Professor Tambo will be safe. They should go out and look for him. He's a venerated elite of that village, and if they all put their hands together, I think we can be able to get those who are taking hostage. In the meantime, the security here is not going to sleep while waiting for reinforcement from Haraki.
Ugito calls for the traditional rulers of Lewo to ensure Professor Tambo's safety and work to ensure his release. He said security measures would be increased in the meantime. In a video circulated by suspected armed separatists on social media, Tambo is seen stripped almost naked in the presence of disguised gunmen. Two other government officials were abducted last month and have not been found. The abductions took place the day the first English-speaking Cameroonian to be appointed Minister of Territorial Administration, Paul Atanganji, was visiting English-speaking towns in northwestern Cameroon in an effort to find solutions to the separatist crisis. Nji says President Biya is committed to win the war he declared against armed Anglophone separatists.
The head of state, His Excellency Paul Biya, Commander-in-Chief of Armed Forces, told me to tell all the forces of law and order that they can count on him, that he will give them all the resources which will permit them to accomplish their missions.
The crisis in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon began in late 2016 with English teachers and lawyers protesting what they called the overbearing use of French in the English-speaking zones of the bilingual country and degenerated with separatist calls for independence. The government says hundreds of people, including 30 policemen and soldiers, have died in violence since January, when Nigeria detained and then extradited separatist leader Ayuktabe Julius and 46 other alleged separatists to Cameroon. The separatist groups are demanding the 47 detainees who have not been seen in public be released. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Daylight power, microbial killing mask and suits may someday help protect health workers from deadly germs like Ebola, according to new research. The same material could find its way into food packaging as well, helping cut down foodborne diseases. VOA Steve Baragona has more.
Frontline health workers wear protective gear to shield themselves during outbreaks of deadly diseases. Think of the white-suited workers during the West African Ebola outbreak in 2014. But that gear gets contaminated and poses a health risk.
If there's any live bacteria or viruses still on the surface of the face mask or your clothing materials, it's still transmissible and also could cause infection.
Gang Sun at the University of California at Davis and colleagues have developed plastic sheets that produce a tiny bit of disinfecting hydrogen peroxide when exposed to daylight. It's less than what you'd use to remove laundry stains, but it's enough to kill germs, he says.
The approach is quite novel.
Rohan Tekaker at the University of Maryland says others have developed materials that produce disinfecting chemicals, but most only work under high-energy ultraviolet light.
The unique aspect of the study is that it is not using the high-intensity UV light, it is using the sunlight. And the chemistry that they have chosen allows for some of that energy to be stored.
That way, it can still kill germs in the dark. Sun explains it acts like a battery.
But this battery is not producing electricity, rather that it produces hydrogen peroxide on the surface of your material.
If the new plastic makes its way into commercial production, it could not only save health workers, it could also save your vegetables.
We add a layer of this in your package, and now it can reduce any kind of bacteria contamination.
Sun says one of the next steps is to make the material edible. The research is published in the journal Science Advances. Steve Baragona, VOA News, Washington.
Italian authorities have seized a migrant rescue ship run by the Spanish charity Proactiva Open Arms. The Italian Coast Guard say the ship picked up migrants from unsafe rubber boats in international waters 73 miles off Libya's coast on Thursday. The aid group says the boat was detained on charges that its crew helped illegal migration by rescuing more than 200 people before Libya's Coast Guard could move in to take them back to Africa. The case highlighted an increasing charged standoff between humanitarian groups seeking to save lives on the open seas and European authorities trying to stem the number of people making the dangerous crossings. Reporter Josephine McKinnon describes the latest with VOA's Kim Lewis.
Italian authorities in Sicily have ordered the detention of a vessel run by the Spanish NGO Proactiva Open Arms. Now, this organization has been accused of promoting illegal immigration and criminal association. This is quite an unusual move, and the order came after the vessel had rescued 218 migrants off the coast of Libya. Now, it seems that the ship had some conflict with the Libyan Coast Guard during this rescue mission. The Libyan Coast Guard reportedly wanted to take the migrants back to Libya. Instead, they were rescued by this organization and taken to Sicily.
Would you say this was an unusual development?
This is an incredible development, really. When you think about how far it's changed in terms of rescues on the Mediterranean, this is one of the few, if not the only, organization from Spain that is rescuing migrants in the Mediterranean. We've seen the Italian government and the EU push back on migrant rescues. The Italians have trained the Libyan Coast Guard to rescue migrants and return them to Libya. And this is a new development, a hard line from the Italian authorities. The public prosecutor in the city of Catania accused the organization of seeking to bring migrants to Italy. And you would think that this was a humanitarian gesture, not a violation of international law. Now, this is turning into a diplomatic incident. The European Union is looking into it and has called for the respect of human rights and the respect of the code of conduct for NGOs. And the Spanish foreign minister is also seeking clarification on the Italian action. So this is quite a serious development, especially when you think, well, just last week, Proactiva Open Arms brought 93 people to Italy, including an Eritrean that immediately died of complications caused by malnutrition after spending several months in Libya.
So what is the reaction from the organization?
Well, the founder of Proactiva Open Arms has defended the organization's actions, saying that the organization is committed to protecting human life and that should be on the top of the agenda. Returning migrants to the Libyan Coast Guard, he said, would be the equivalent of deportation and a contravention of the UN Convention on the Status of Refugees. So some very strong words here on an issue that is certain to generate more international attention, particularly when we've seen this clampdown from the Italian authorities and the EU in recent months, pushing back migrants. We've seen 12,000 migrants arrive in the Mediterranean on European soil this year, around 6,000 in Italy, and that's a dramatic fall in what was taking place last year.
That's reporter Justin McKinnon with VOA's Kim Lewis. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. A local organization that distributes local seeds in Budwe State wants the government to restrict international groups from importing seeds into the country. But the UN's Food and Agriculture Representative in South Sudan says his office does not directly involve itself in procuring seeds and insists the FAO adheres to guidelines set by the Minister of Agriculture. The Global Agriculture Innovation and Solutions nonprofit works with 200 farmers across the state. The executive director of the group says he produced more than 150 metric tons of maize seeds in 2017. FAO released a statement on March 8th citing prevailing food insecurity across the country, but says FAO supports vulnerable farmers by distributing crop seeds and tools for use in the main agricultural season. Daylight-powered microbe-killing masks and suits may someday help protect health workers from deadly germs like Ebola. That's according to new research. The same material could find its way into food packaging as well. And finally, Italian authorities have seized a migrant rescue ship run by the Spanish charity Proactiva Open Arms. The Italian Coast Guard says the ship picked up migrants from unsafe rubber boats. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Longoño by Colonel Mido.
Sabi guru shuta kide mabodita visa mae saidu masakine saidu akwana kulue saidu masakine saidu akwana kulue guru shuta kide mabido funita ya sabi Shutaki de mabodita fisa mae Saidu masakine Saidu akwana kulwe Saidu masakine Hey yakwana Aino takumlokuluku Makala mgurus rasto biga kebir.
We have been listening to Colonel Mido with the song Longoño. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Let's know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. We hope to have you here tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.